Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is our fourth Quran study session. In the last session, I went over verse 2 in chapter 2, Al-Baqarah, or the cow. ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ This is the scripture, the Quran, in which there is no doubt, a guidance for muttaqin, or the righteous. We examine the concept of taqwa or righteousness in depth. The next three verses in Al-Baqarah spell out additional characteristics for those the Quran will guide. الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْغَيْبِ وَيُقِيمُونَ الصَّلَاةَ وَمِمَّا رَزَغْنَاهُمْ يُنْفِقُونَ وَالَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِمَا أُنْزِلَ إِلَيْكَ وَمَا أُنْزِلَ مِنْ قَبْلِكَ وَبِالْآخِرَةِ هُمْ يُوقِنُونَ أُولَئِكَ عَلَى هُدًى مِنْ رَبِّهِمْ وَأُولَئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ Those who believe in the unseen are steadfast in prayer and spend out of what we have provided for them. And who believe in the revelation sent down unto you and sent down before you and are certain of the hereafter, such people are on true guidance from their Lord, and it is they who shall prosper. So these verses enumerate six distinguishing qualities for those on true guidance from God, those who shall prosper. What are those six qualities and characteristics? Belief in qayb, or the unseen, salat, or prayer, charity, belief in the Quran as the word of God, belief in the revelation to other messengers, and hereafter. These six characteristics are also part and parcel to the Islamic belief system. Today, inshallah, I will focus on the very first characteristic on top of that list. الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْقَيْبِ Those who believe in the unseen. What does qayb or the unseen really mean? Why is belief in qayb so important? What does the Quran say about qayb or the unseen? How do the unseen and the natural world in which we live interact? Very important question. What are some of the attributes of qayb? These are the questions that I will address today, inshallah. Qayb is a very difficult topic to talk about and digest. I want to set your expectation straight at the very outset. Qayb is a very difficult topic to talk about and digest because we live in nature. We live among tangible things. The unseen is an unfamiliar territory for us, very hard to relate to. But the Quran informs that we are engulfed by qayb. Very critical statement I just made. The Quran tells us that we are engulfed by qayb or unseen. Like a fish that swims in water and doesn't know that it is swimming in water, we also swim in qayb, the unseen, even though we are mostly unaware of it. Qayb is central not just to the Quran and Islam, but to all religions. I can even go so far as to say that qayb, the unseen, is the distinguishing feature of religion. Qayb, or unseen, actually sets religion apart from science and philosophy. So if you were to ask me, what is the single most important characteristic or feature that sets religion apart from science and philosophy, I would say it's ghaib, or the unseen. Messengers of God were primarily concerned with ghaib, the unseen. They wanted to make humanity aware that there is much more to existence, wujud, than meets the eye. They introduced us to realities such as God, hereafter, akhirat, judgment day, qiyamat, heaven and hell, and all of these fall in the category of ghaib, or the unseen. Revelation, wahy, is also in this category of ghaib. The Quran itself is a product of ghaib, or the unseen. Specifically in chapter 11, verse 49, it is said, تِلْكَ مِنْ أَنْبَاءِ الْغَيْبِ نُوحِيهَا إِلَيْكَ. O Muhammad, these are among the accounts of the unseen that we reveal unto you. If one does not believe in the existence of ghaib or unseen, she cannot accept the Quran as the revealed word of God. This is why ghaib, or the unseen, appears on top of the list in verses 3 and 4 of Al-Baqarah. You remember when I've recited those words? الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْقَيْبَ وَيُقِيمُونَ السَّلَاةَ وَمِمَّا رَزَغْنَاهُمْ يُنْفِقُونَ. On and on. Of those six important qualities of those who will prosper, on top of that list is belief in ghaib or unseen. And that's the reason why. Okay, now let's delve into this important Quranic topic of ghaib. What does ghaib mean? Ghaib comes from the Arabic root qaba, which means to be hidden, to be unseen, to be secret. Qaba also means slander and backbite. So qaybat also comes from the same root, qaybat kardan. In most English translations, ghaib is rendered unseen, and I will stick to that same translation. So whenever I refer to unseen, I mean the Arabic word ghaib, and vice versa. Now, in the context of verse 3 in Al-Baqarah, الَّذِينَ يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْقَيْبِ, ghaib refers to realities that are hidden from our five ordinary senses. Let me repeat one more time. Ghaib refers to realities in this vast universe that are hidden from our five ordinary senses, the sense of sight, hearing, touch, smell, and taste. There are realities in existence that these senses cannot grasp. Our ordinary senses are really designed to explore and grasp the natural, physical, and the material world, not the supernatural world or ghaib. In the Quran, ghaib appears in about 60 verses in different forms and applications. But perhaps there are two major constructs or underlying themes involving the word ghaib, and I want to focus and zero in on these two themes and constructs. The first one is Alimul Qaib. Alimul Qaib. Knower of the unseen. There are a number of verses in the Quran dealing with this construct. Alimul Qaib. Knower of the unseen. The issue here is who has knowledge of the unseen. The second topic or underlying theme is Alamul Ghaib. Alamul Ghaib, the unseen world. The issue here is realities that are invisible to the human ordinary senses. Let me tackle these two themes. First, let's examine Alamul Ghaib, or who knows about the unseen. The Quran is actually very direct and unequivocal on this question. We don't have to really guess who knows the unseen. The Quran, off the bat, tells us who knows the unseen. Chapter 27, verse 65. قُلْ لَا يَعْلَمُ مَنْ فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ الْغَيْبَ إِلَّا اللَّهِ. No one in the heavens or on earth knows the unseen except God. So only God knows the unseen and no one else, including the Prophet Muhammad. There are a few verses in the Quran that actually state that even the Prophet Muhammad did not know Ghaib or the unseen. Let me give you one of those verses. Chapter 6, verse 50. قُلْ لَا أَقُولُ لَكُمْ إِنْدِي خَزَائِنُ اللَّهِ وَلَا أَعْلَمُ الْغَيْبِ وَلَا أَقُولُ لَكُمْ إِنِّي مَلَكٌ إِنْ أَتَّبِعُ إِلَّا مَا يُوحَى إِلَيْهِ. The Prophet say, I do not have the treasures of God, nor do I know the unseen, nor do I tell you that I am an angel. I only follow what is revealed to me. It is said that Arab disbelievers came to the Prophet Muhammad and asked, what is the timing of the Day of Judgment? When will Qiyamah arrive? And then this verse was revealed. Only God knows when the Day of Judgment will come. So, this is the conclusion that I want to make out of these verses about who knows the unseen. Only God is Alamul Ghaib. Only God knows of future events and the outcome of actions. Only God knows who will go to heaven. It's not for you and I, for religious leaders to say and predict who will go to heaven. Only God knows that. Only God knows what goes on in people's hearts, minds, and intentions. Do not attempt to peek into people's hearts, mind, and intentions and foretell what they are about to do. Only God knows what goes on in people's hearts, minds, and intentions. Now, let me make a side note here. The belief some Shiites have that Imams knew Ghaib or the unseen has no basis in Quranic teachings. Just to make sure everybody understand, let me say it in Farsi. این باور که امامان علم غیب داشتن حقیقتا هیچ توجیه قرآنی نداره. هیچ پشتوانه قرآنی نداره. در جایی که قرآن تصریح داره شخص شخیص پیامبر اکرم علم غیب نداشت، دیگه تکلیف سایر ابناء بشر روشن هست. Now let's turn to the second construct or theme of Ghaib in the Quran, Alamul Ghaib, the unseen world. This theme is employed actually in Allazina Yu'minuna Bil Ghaib. The Quran rejects the notion that existence, wujud, ya hasti, is limited to the physical and material world. According to the Quran, there are two sides or two dimensions to existence, Qaib and Shahada. There are two dimensions, two sides to existence or wujud, Qaib and Shahada. We know what Qaib is. What does Shahada mean? The other side of existence. Shahada is the opposite of Qaib, so it may be rendered seen. But Shahada essentially amounts to realities that are visible and open to ordinary human senses. We can use our five senses to explore Shahada, and that's the legitimate realm of science. The dichotomy of Ghaib and Shahada is used in many verses in the Quran, and let me give you a couple of examples. One instance is in chapter 59, verse 22. هُوَ اللَّهُ الَّذِي لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا هُوَ عَالِمُ الْقَيْبِ وَالشَّهَادَةِ هُوَ الرَّحْمَنُ الرَّحِيمُ. He is God. There is no other God but Him. It is He who knows the unseen and the seen. And He is the compassionate, the merciful. Here is another example. Chapter 62, verse 8. قُلْ إِنَّ الْمَوْتِ الَّذِي تَفِرُّونَ مِنْهُ فَإِنَّهُ مُلَاقِيكُمْ ثُمَّ تُرَدُّونَ إِلَىٰ عَالِمِ الْقَيْبِ وَالشَّهَادَةِ فَيُنَبِّئُكُمْ بِمَا كُنْتُمْ تَعْمَلُونَ. O say, Muhammad, truly the death from which you flee will surely meet you. Then you shall be returned to the knower of the unseen and the seen, and he will inform you of that which you used to do. What is the core message of these verses? There is absolutely nothing hidden from God. Nothing is hidden from God. دفتر زندگی ما آدمیان مثل کتابی هست که سطر اون رو خداوند میتونه بخونه. There is absolutely nothing hidden from God. Everything is crystal clear. Everything is manifest to Him. He is the all-knower, the all-seer, and the all-hearer. The dichotomy of Ghaib and Shahada, hidden and manifest, applies strictly to us, the human mortals, not God. Let me repeat one more time. This dichotomy that you find in the Quran, Ghaib and Shahada, the hidden, and the manifest only applies to us, not to God. Now let me pose an important question. Are Qaib and Shahada, the hidden and manifest, isolated from each other? Are the hidden and manifest, the seen and the unseen, parallel universes with no point of contact? Not at all, according to the Quran. Qaib and Shahada are not isolated from each other. In fact, Shahada, or the seen, is enveloped by Qaib. This is a very crucial point in the Quran. Shahada, or the seen, the manifest world, is enveloped by Qaib, or unseen. And by the way, the same idea applies to here and hereafter, dunya va akhirat. So, dunya, here, is enveloped by the hereafter or akhirat. Bevinid, dunya dar dil akhirat hast. Akhirat زمان بعد از دنیا نیست. آخرت همین امروز هم وجود داره. دنیا در دل آخرت هست. رومی uses the analogy of womb to shed light on the coexistence of غیب and شهادت. دنیا و آخرت. Very insightful analogy that Rumi has. To the baby inside a womb, the world is the womb. That's all there is to it. The baby inside the womb is oblivious to the existence of a far bigger world outside. The baby does not know that the womb lives in a far bigger world. Whereas the baby is simultaneously in both worlds, in here and hereafter, in dunya and akhirat. The same idea in the analogy of womb applies to qayb and shahada, hidden and manifest, to here and hereafter, dunya va akhirat. At this very moment that you and I live here in dunya, the shahada, the seen, our physical world lives inside a bigger world, ghaib or the unseen. Most of us do not see the bigger world. Why? Because it is hidden from our five ordinary senses. So ghaib and shahada are not parallel universes or isolated from each other. They actually meet and interact. This is one of the most fundamental insight that the Quran teaches to all of us. And also what Rumi is very big on this, as I will elaborate further. So Qayb and Shahada, the hidden and the manifest, meet and interact. But what happens when Qayb and Shahada meet in our consciousness? Let me repeat one more time. Here we're talking about the contact and the meeting of Qayb and Shahada in our consciousness, the way we human beings experience this contact, when we have a supernatural experience. Whenever you have a supernatural experience, an experience out of this world, that is the contact or the meeting of Qayb and Shahada. Rumi draws upon the Quranic story of Mary to shed light on this intriguing experience when humans come into contact with the supernatural or Qayb. Very fascinating story in the Quran. The story of Mary, the mother of Jesus, is narrated in chapter 19 in the Quran. As the story goes, Mary was bathing in a river in a secluded area. Suddenly, a handsome young man appeared out of nowhere. Who was that man? Chapter 19, verse 17 tells us who that man was. فَأَرْسَلْنَا إِلَيْهَا رُوحَنَا فَتَمَثَّلَ لَهَا بَشَرًا سَوِيًّا. We sent our spirit unto Mary, who appeared before her in the form of a perfect man. So it was the spirit of God, an angel, who appeared before Mary in the form of a perfect man. So understandably, Mary was frightened. She said to the man, قالت إني أعوذ بالرحمن منك إن كنت تقيا. She said, from you I seek refuge to the most gracious God. Don't come near me if you fear God. But the man calmed Mary down and said, قال إنما أنا رسول ربك. He said, I am but a messenger from your Lord. That man was actually a messenger from God to announce to Mary that she will soon have a pure son, Jesus. Now let's listen to Rumi's spin on this fascinating story. When the frightened Mary tells the man, "Inni a'uzu bir-Rahman," from you I seek refuge to God, the angel responded, "An panaham man ke makhlas hat bud, to a'uzari yo man khod an a'uz." Mary, I am the refuge that was often the source of your deliverance. You take refuge from me, and I myself am that refuge. Mary, I am from the same place you are seeking refuge to. I am that refuge. Maryam, من همون پناهم، منم از همون جایی اومدم که تو میخوای به اونجا پناهنده بشی. I come from غیب. I have descended down into the natural world and assumed the form of a young man. مریما بنگر که نقش مشکلم، هم هلالم، هم خیالم در دلم. Oh Mary, look well. For I am a difficult form to apprehend. I am both a new moon in the sky and an imagination in your heart. Mary, I am a very complex being. I am both objective and subjective. I am both independent from you and dependent of you. On the one hand, I am objective like a new moon in the sky. You are not hallucinating. You are not having an illusion. I'm real. But on the other hand, I'm also subjective. I am dependent on you since no one else can see me. I have appeared to you in your khiyal or imagination. What does khiyal or imagination mean in Rumi's usage? Khiyal or imagination, the way Rumi is talking about it here, is an inner sense. So we have outer senses, external senses, like those five, the sense of sight, touch, so on and so forth. We also have inner senses. One of those inner senses is the sense of imagination or khiyal. This inner sense is very strong in some people, such as the prophets of God and mystics. With this inner sense, they can understand and comprehend realities that are not immediately present to our ordinary senses. Don't think that imagination or khiyal is the exclusive attribute of prophets and mystics. No. Imagination is crucial for scientific thinking. Those of you who are very big on science, hear me out. Imagination, which is an attribute of mystics and messengers of God, is also critical for top-notch scientists. Imagination is crucial for scientific thinking, for art, for education, and social change. Those who have a strong imagination in these areas, they can envision things that are not manifest or present today. They can think out of the box. Without Einstein's creative imagination, we would not have had the theory of relativity. Yes, relativity was originally just an imagination inside Einstein's mind. But it was real. Einstein was not hallucinating. It wasn't an illusion. It was real. It was proven to be true in many experiments later. In the story of Mary, Rumi tries to show what happens when unseen realities descend and appear to us in the natural world. I can share with you two more instances in the Quran where Qayb and Shahada meet. One of them is Wahy, the other one is Mi'raj, revelation and ascendance. Revelation or Wahy originates from Qayb or unseen, from God. So Wahy, revelation, originates from the unseen dimension of this universe and then ends up in the heart of a human, such as the Prophet in the word of Shahada or the seen. Verse 49 in chapter 11 specifically speaks of revelation to the Prophet Muhammad in this context. تِلْكَ مِنْ أَنْبَاءِ الْقَيْبِ نُوحِيهَا إِلَيْكَ مَا كُنْتَ تَعْلَمُهَا أَنْتَ وَلَا قَوْمَكَ مِنْ قَبْلِ هَذَا. These are among the accounts of the unseen that we reveal unto you, Muhammad. Neither you nor your people knew them beforehand. تِلْكَ مِنْ أَنْبَاءِ الْقَيْبِ. What we are teaching you, Muhammad, are among the accounts of Qayb, the unseen. نُوحِيهَا إِلَيْكَ. We are revealing that knowledge to you in a form that you can understand. So, revelation is the descent of Qayb into the material world. Mi'raj works in the opposite direction. It is an ascent going up from Shahada or the material world into Qayb or the unseen. Mi'raj or ascent refers to the spiritual journey of the Prophet Muhammad. Accounts differ on the exact mechanism of this journey. Was it physical? Did Prophet Muhammad's body move from Mecca to outer space? Or was it really an inner journey? A report by Aisha, the Prophet's wife, states that on the night of Mi'raj or ascent, the Prophet was actually at home. Aisha says that the Prophet Muhammad on that fateful night didn't go anywhere. He was in our house. So the Prophet did not physically go to heavens on a flying horse or on a rocket. In that fateful night, the Prophet had an amazing spiritual experience. So here again is an instance where the Qayb and Shahada, unseen and seen, interact and meet in a human consciousness, in a person's consciousness. In that fateful night, the Prophet Muhammad had one foot in nature and another foot in the supernatural. An amazing feat. He went on a journey with Archangel Gabriel. At that night, the Prophet Muhammad witnessed realities in Qayb or unseen. He saw the kingdom of heaven, angels, heaven and hell. He was introduced to some mysteries of this universe. در میراج پیامبر باطن عالم رو دید. پیامبر با پاره ای از رازهای این عالم آشنا شد. For us human mortals, غیب or the unseen is the territory of mysteries in this world. غیب خطه رازهای این عالم هست. هر وقت شما این تعبیر غیب رو میشنوید، مراد خطه رازهای این عالم هست. So mystery is a hallmark of the unseen. There is a lot of misunderstanding about mystery. Mystery does not mean secret or some information that only a select group of folks know, like a top secret document that the CIA has, and only certain eyes can see that document. That's not what mystery means in the Quran. Mystery is not something that science has not discovered yet, but it will be discovered once we have better technologies. Mystery refers to a reality that our rational faculty or aql cannot fully digest and comprehend, because that reality is from out of this natural world. Our reason is well suited to digest things that are from the seen or the material world. God, angels, revelation, life after death, heaven and hell, the very act of creation, these are all mysteries. Our rational faculty cannot crack these nuts open. Love is also another mystery. Love, the most precious thing we all seek to experience in life, is also a mystery. What is the mystery in love? Rumi says, unity. Unity is the mystery that lies deep in love. I just want to give you an example of what a mystery is. راز عشق وحدت بخشی است. Rumi says that unity is the mystery that lies deep in love. And here, by the way, I don't mean romantic love that evaporates in short order. Love is the relationship that is formed between two totally independent and separate persons, between a lover and a beloved. Love unites the two into one. How is it possible for two physical bodies to join and become one? That is a mystery. Rumi draws on the love story of Layli and Majnun to explain the unifying property of love. Layli and Majnun is a very famous love story in Persian literature, very similar to Romeo and Juliet in Shakespeare's work. Layli is Juliet and Majnun is Romeo. Majnun, Rumi says, came down with diphtheria, which is a serious infectious disease. In old days, physicians treated infectious disease by bloodletting, با نیشتر زدن. They punctured a vein with lancet or a sharp surgical knife. So when Majnun got sick, a physician visited him and determined that there was no option but bloodletting. As soon as the physician poked Majnun with a sharp knife, Majnun screamed like hell. The folks in the room told Majnun, "You used to live in desert. You were beaten by snakes many times. You never screamed. How come you cannot tolerate a small cut now?" Majnun replied, گفت مجنون من نمی ترسم ز نیش، صبر من از کوه سنگین هست بیش. لیک از لیلی وجود من پر است، این صدف پر از صفات آن دور است. ترسم ای فساد گر فستم کنی، نیش را ناگاه بر لیلی زنی. من کیم لیلی و لیلی کیست من؟ ما یکی روحیم اندر دو بدن. مجنون said, I don't fear the lancet. My endurance is greater than a rocky mountain. But my whole being is full of Layli. This shell, my body, is filled with the qualities of that pearl. I am afraid if you let my blood, you suddenly inflict a wound with your lancet upon Layli. Who am I, Layli? And who is Layli, me? We are one soul in two bodies. Majnun says, we are really one, not two. Now, how would two separate persons end up becoming one soul, such that one's thoughts, emotions, and feelings would be a replica of the other person? That is a mystery. We can never ever figure that out. Only true lovers can possibly understand this mystery. So in conclusion, mystery and ghaib in general cannot be unlocked with rational faculty and conveyed to others. We can only have personal experience of ghaib or mystery and come to understand it in our heart. There is a lot more to be said about ghaib in the Quran, as I mentioned, it's a fairly difficult concept to talk about and digest, and I hope that what I shared with you today in sermon was of some value to you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.